A Columbine survivor speaks out, and a good look at different therapies and treatments for strokes, including thrombolytics. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day, and welcome to The Nursing Show. This is episode 11, and I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic. I'd like to welcome all of you to the show, and if you're a brand new listener to The Nursing Show, I want to welcome you especially, and let you know that you can check out all of the links to everything that I'll be talking about in today's episode over at nursingshow.com. I try to provide a good authoritative set of links over there, and there's a set of show notes for every episode. Plus, I post other news items, other study links, and other commentary over there periodically throughout the week, and you can find all of that at nursingshow.com. Of course, if you are a longtime listener to the show, I want to thank you again for staying tuned and checking back in here with the show. Remember to keep in touch and let me know if you have any comments, any questions, any suggestions for future episodes, as well as any corrections. I'm not perfect, and if I misspeak something and I don't catch it when I edit the show, I want to make sure you let me know so that I can get the correct information out to the other listeners. This is a community effort here, folks, and I want to make sure that we get the best possible information out to everyone that is listening in the community. If you do need to get in touch with me, you can do so over at the Nursing Show site by commenting on any of the articles, or you can email me directly at comments@nursingshow.com. I'll get back to you and let you know I received your email, and maybe I'll be able to share it with the other listeners here on the show directly. Make sure, if you need to, that you send me any links to any materials that you're referring to so that we can make sure we're all on the same page and we can check everybody's sources and make sure that the information is the best information for the Nursing Show listeners. Thanks a lot, and I guess now it'll be time to move on into this week's news. I thought I'd lead off the news items today with an interesting article I found over at WebMD.com, and that was an interview with a Columbine, Colorado high school survivor. Marjorie Lindholm survived the 1999 school shootings. She was in one of the science classrooms with one of the teachers that was shot. They performed first aid on the teacher, who later died, but they were cooped up in there for 4 hours while they waited for a rescue. And it is an interesting look at just the long-term effects of traumatic incidents to people, and how different people handle things in different ways, and just a look at the long-term healing process that is still not complete for this individual. She's a very courageous woman. She is attempting to complete her bachelor's degree. She wants to become a physician's assistant, and she still has difficulty attending classes in a classroom setting. She gets anxious and cannot complete her classes, so she's having to complete her bachelor's degree in an online setting because she just can't attend a classroom school. She's also written a book called A Columbine Survivor's Story, and in this book, she basically has collected a lot of the journal entries that she started to write down as a way to get her feelings out and onto paper, and her parents divorced soon after it, so she didn't have a strong support network there, and she was unable to really talk about it for years to even her mother, and eventually began to keep a journal as a way to get some of these feelings out. And so with the recent shootings at the universities that we've seen recently over the past weeks, and indeed last year at Virginia Tech, we need to keep in mind that there are long-term effects, that even now, 8-9 years later, this woman is still having significant effects related to her association with that incident. She was unable to complete high school. She eventually got a GED, but was unable to go back to school and had to drop out. This is just a great article. It's lots of great questions in the interview. And if you're even more interested, I'm sure you can check out a way to get a hold of her book directly and read some of her personal thoughts there as well. But just something to think about as you deal with patients that may be dealing with things like post-traumatic stress disorder, that we just have a reminder that even what we think of as a sufficient time to pass, maybe a year, 2 years, may not be enough. That this, we're talking 8 years, 9 years here. She's still not recovered completely from this incident and may never recover completely from this incident. And interestingly enough, she's accepted that. She's accepted some of the limitations that this incident has imposed on her life and her lifestyle. So just a great read, and I urge you to check out the link in the show notes for that particular article. Moving along, I will wrap up the news with two different news stories looking at different therapies and treatments for stroke patients. One is a set of studies looking at experimental stem cell therapies and some of the recent advancements that this study has achieved with stroke-disabled animals having improved ability to walk after getting a stem cell transplant. And this seems to be, again, pointing to the evidence that stem cell research and stem cell implantation is a potential resource for healing some of the injury associated with stroke and other neurological injuries that affect function. And while they may not have regeneration, it seems that there is some form of brain repair that is occurring with the implantation of these stem cells. And we're not exactly sure, according to the study's authors, what is specifically happening, but it seems that the stem cells themselves secrete chemicals that seem to stimulate new blood vessel formation and promoting growth of new neural pathways. And so this is what they're looking at in this particular study. It's exciting work, and it's hopeful that people with brain injury, people with long-term spinal cord injuries and paralysis may be able to, maybe in the next few years, begin to see some return of function if some of these therapies and treatments can make it to the marketplace in a safe manner for these patients. So good news all the way around on that front. Another study that I looked at was looking at a study about music and stroke patients. And music therapy is something that I know nurses have been using for a long time. We all know that music seems to have a different effect on us. I know when I'm in a foul mood, there are certain songs that if I get my iPod out and start listening to them, I will find that my mood just seems to lift up and change a little bit. And I think that that is certainly appropriate for any kind of treatment. There's been numerous studies looking at the effects of music therapy on pain management, looking at the effect of music therapy on the treatment of behavioral patients, and now a Finnish study that has just recently been published looks at how music seems to help people recover more quickly from strokes. The patients in this study listened to a few hours of music each day after they had had a stroke, and it seemed to improve their memory, and it seemed to keep them in a better mood, it seemed to help them be more relaxed, and this was compared to patients who did not listen to music or listen to audiobooks while they were recovering from their stroke. Now, it's unsure to say whether this finding is related to a normal post-stroke recovery pattern, but it seems as if these patients that are listening to music and stimulating more pathways through the use of music and other auditory stimulation seem to be having a better recovery pattern for their stroke. So what does this mean for people in the nursing field? Well, it means that you should encourage patients to, if they don't want to, you know, if they don't have a television and they don't want to watch TV, put some music on by the bedside. Encourage family members to bring in some favorite songs. often you look at the studies looking at playing classical music for infants to stimulate the growth of mathematical pathways in the brain. There are also, I think, certain aspects that can be applied here as well to rebridge some pathways in the brain using music. And so it's an exciting article, and I urge you to check it out yourself. This study is just another way to use alternative therapies in the recovery of patients from different types of illnesses. And that'll wrap up this week's news. So for the tip and trick of the week this week, I thought since those two stroke articles seemed to just leap off the page when I was doing my news search for this episode, that I would go ahead and look at some aspects of dealing with stroke. And the more conventional stroke therapies that we are going to see currently in the hospital setting. Specifically, I'm talking about the use of thrombolytic therapy, the use of tissue plasminogen activator, TPA, Retiplase, whatever your facility might be calling this particular agent. This medication is useful if applied rapidly to a stroke patient following the onset of symptoms. So we're going to be looking at strokes, stroke centers, and the rapid administration of TPA to the stroke patient and some of the nursing implications involved with the administration of this drug. As always, I urge you to head over and check out the show notes for this episode at nursingshow.com. I have links to a couple of different sites that you can check out. First of all, there's two different links for TPA. One over at medicinenet.com and the other one at the National Institutes of Health Medline Plus catalog or encyclopedia for medication and medical information. And then also I have a link to the American Stroke Association site. It's an association that is directly linked to the American Heart Association. And there is a lot of great information there, including some links to some free continuing ed credit. You do need to register at the American Heart Association site, which is free, but once you're registered, you can get access to some of this information. And there's just a ton of information there. It's available for free anyway, but if you do want to try out and get some of those CE credits, you do have to register directly for the site. But a lot of information over there about stroke centers and some of the stroke initiatives that are going on right now in the United States. So what is stroke? Well, okay, stroke really is a cerebrovascular accident, CVA. Some strokes may be mini strokes or TIA, trans ischemic attacks. There's been a lot of study recently, and there seems to be strong evidence that patients who experience series of TIAs, even single episodes of a TIA, are at much higher risk to actually have a full-blown CVA at some point soon after that within the next year. So there's a lot of information that applies to all patients, even if they have symptoms that seem to resolve on their own pretty quickly, which would be the case with a TIA patient where they have stroke-like symptoms that resolve maybe even before they think to call a doctor, that they don't even recognize that it may be a stroke, maybe just a short period of weakness on one side of the body, and they don't relate it back to that it's a stroke-related incident until they actually have a major CVA later on in the time frame. Now, back in January, the American Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released information showing that stroke age-adjusted death rates are down by 24.4%. This means that they are close to reaching their 2010 strategic goals for the American Heart Association for reducing deaths from coronary heart disease and stroke. They're nearly there and they're ahead of schedule. But they do point out that there are still significant risk factors out there. And in fact, as the population continues to shift towards a larger percentage of aged persons, and these people are at higher risk for stroke, these numbers still may not reach the goal, and it's important for everyone in the healthcare sector to be aware of that and pay attention to what needs to be done to reach the goal of reducing risk factors for diseases related to stroke and heart disease by 25% by the year 2010. This is exciting news, but it means that we still have some ways to go, and certainly wouldn't it be great if we could make that number 30% by 2010. And that's certainly reachable by implementing some of the new protocols that are out there for having stroke centers, regional facilities, just like there are cardiac centers, that there be stroke centers that have teams specially trained, cross-discipline, physicians, nurses, everyone really in that whole spectrum of the healthcare process, physical therapists, occupational therapists, and of course, EMS in the field, all are important parts of a process to get these patients from onset of symptoms to definitive treatment, which includes thrombolytic therapy when it's been shown that it is a thrombolytic stroke, that these patients get there in under 3 hours. 3 hours is the key time frame for having effective use of TPA. And so we have to identify the stroke. We have to get the patient transported to an appropriate facility. That facility needs to have measures in place for rapid diagnosis of the type of accident and injury. Is it related to a hemorrhagic problem, or is it indeed related to a blood clot? And if it's related to a blood clot, to rapidly administer the dose of TPA. And if you talk to people or you yourself work in an emergency department that does this kind of program, and everybody really should, but regional centers and small community hospitals may not be as proactive in these things, you have seen patients come in with complete one-sided deficit, you know, complete hemiplegia, and yet they turn around and walk out of the hospital a day later. And they have no or very limited side effects resulting from that stroke because of rapid identification and treatment. So these are things that you can do. And there's a lot of information at the American Heart Association site or the American Stroke Association. They're affiliated, so I get them confused. But you will find that link in the show notes. You can head over there. If you don't have a stroke center in your region and you want to take the initiative, I know in my area, that initiative came about because of the actions of several ER nurses. So this is something that can be improved upon directly by the actions of the nursing staff at any facility. Find a way to get the information. It's freely available at the American Stroke Association site. Find out what you can do to get your facility to be a stroke center, and then you can go a long way towards treating these patients and getting them on the road to a complete recovery. So let's look a little bit at TPA. TPA works by converting the plasminogen to plasmin and then degrades the fibrin in the clots. And what this does is it takes the clots and starts breaking them down. The issue, of course, is that you may have breaking away of smaller clots that eventually will be broken down, but until they dissolve completely, may cause other problems in the immediate term. So that's something that needs to be monitored carefully. The other thing is that you need to make sure that you do not have a history of other bleeding. You know, if this patient had very recent surgery, if the patient had other problems related to GI bleeding, maybe they have some kind of gastrointestinal disorder that causes them to have regular bleeds, this is something that you're going to need to pay attention to in your history. These may be relative contraindications, but certainly in patient history taking, this information wants to be ascertained and noted carefully in the chart. You want to have multiple IV lines established. You certainly want to administer the TPA or alteplase or whatever it is you're administering, whatever version of the drug you're administering happens to be. You certainly want to make sure that you have a separate IV line for this infusion, and that way you can administer other medications as needed to take care of other issues that may be going on. And that's what the other IV access site would be available for. You also want to make sure that you regularly assess this patient for bleeding. We're taking away their ability to clot because we're breaking down clots. and we certainly don't want to miss anything that may be occurring as a result. Certainly, any invasive procedure that you perform is going to have a greater likelihood of causing long-term bleeding. You need to be prepared for this. If you do need to administer something like an IM injection or perform some procedure that may cause some localized trauma, you need to be prepared to administer direct pressure for a significant amount of time in order to stop the ongoing bleeding in that location. Particularly difficult in this case is if the patient develops internal bleeding and begins to have an altered mental status as a result of that. How are you going to know if they are in the process of recovering from a stroke? And this is why you really need to be paying attention to these patients. You need to note carefully how they improve. Taking regular Glasgow coma scales is a good way to do things, regular neuro assessment, so that if you see an improvement and then you begin to see a decline again, you can start investigating what is causing that decline. And perhaps other indicators will lead you to think that there is hemorrhaging going on. Finally, the last two things, real quick. You need to make sure that you're monitoring these patients for signs of other clots. Now, we're breaking up clots, but part of that process may indeed dislodge a clot in one location and have it move somewhere else in the body as it becomes smaller. And in fact, you could have onset of things like DVT for a short period of time, or more dangerously, pulmonary embolism, where a clot breaks free, lodges in the lung, and you cause a pulmonary embolism. You need to be aware of this. You need to be monitoring these patients carefully. In fact, I've seen different protocols that say 15-minute monitoring for bleeding, and then after the first hour, 15 to 30-minute periods of intermittent monitoring over the course of the next 8 to 12 hours. So you need to look at your facility's protocol for this particular medication. Finally, you want to make sure you're monitoring your labs. You need to be monitoring the patient's CBC, what's their hematocrit, what are their platelet counts. You also want to be looking at their coags, their PT, their PTT or APTT. All of these things need to be monitored carefully. Of course, they are going to be skewed because of the fact that you are administering this medication, but you want to be monitoring how far out of whack they go. And there's a great medical term, out of whack. But anyway, I think that's enough. It's a quick overview of TPA and a quick look at stroke treatment and stroke centers. If you want any more information, I urge you to check out the links in the show notes on this particular topic. And that's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind you that if you have any questions or comments about this episode, please make sure you get in touch with me directly. You can email me at comments@nursingshow.com, or you can head over and leave a comment on the show notes page at nursingshow.com. While you're over at the Nursing Show site, if you weren't around a couple of weeks ago, you might want to review the cranial nerves and some of the neuro assessment involved with cranial nerve checks. And I covered that on a couple of episodes recently, I think episode 9 and 8, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I'll be closing out here very quickly with a great song by an artist that I think will change it up a little bit from what I usually play here, a band called Red Molly. They play some great bluegrass or folk music, and this song is called Darlin' Corey. If you like what you hear, I urge you to check out their music over at the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com, or check out the link in the show notes. And especially if you like to purchase it, you can click the link on the show notes as well to go directly to iTunes and buy their song. I'll wrap up as I always do and say, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to make sure you stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care. Thank you.
dig a hole in the meadow, dig a hole in the cold, damp ground. Dig a hole in the meadow, I'm gonna lay down and curry down. Wake up, darling curry, what makes you sleep so sound? The revenue officers are coming. Dig a hole in the meadow, I'm gonna lay down and carry down.